It's Thursday, July 10th, 2008, and it's 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Welcome to the Stash, everyone. Glad to have you here. We got some great interviews coming up for you today on the Daily Audio Stash. The first two, we got kind of a twofer here, are going to take a look at state efforts in Hawaii and Rhode Island to overturn the vetoes of their governors. Vetoes of bills that were very, very similar. Bills to study the possibility of finding ways to distribute medical marijuana to those states' medical marijuana patients. Not to actually institute dispensaries or do any dispensing of marijuana, just to study the issue. So we'll be speaking with Pam Lichty from Hawaii and Jesse Stout from Rhode Island coming up in our first interviews on The Stash. Then, of course, we've got our Thursday cannabis comedy with Terry Joyce coming to us. You remember Terry from Last Comic Standing, and she's bringing Jeffrey Peterson with her today for a discussion of the dope show. So stick around for that. And, of course, we've got your regularly scheduled musical break. So sit back and relax with a Gandalf and load up a fine bud, because it's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our Normal Daily Audio Stash, Hemp Headlines. Rasta pot smokers win legal leeway in Italy. From Reuters. Rastafarians caught in possession of marijuana in Italy may now have legal recourse thanks to a high court ruling made public on Thursday. Italy's Court of Cassation ruled that since the Rastafari religion considers marijuana a sacrament, its members should be given special consideration when it comes to possession, and how much makes a drug trafficker. The case before the judges dealt with a reggae musician who was sentenced to 16 months in prison by a lower court after being found in possession of enough marijuana to roll 70 cigarettes. The Court of Cassation annulled his sentence, saying the amount appeared appropriate for personal use, considering the heavy amounts that Rastafarians smoke, and ordered an appellate court in Florence to review the case. Rastafari, a religion that emerged in Jamaica in the 1930s, considers Ethiopia its spiritual home, and that country's former emperor, Haile Selassie, a divine figure. Up to 10% of Jamaicans identify themselves as Rastas, but they are virtually unheard of in Roman Catholic Italy. No disrespect intended, but personally, I find the religious use exception for ganja sacrament a bit troubling. Now, don't get me wrong. I absolutely 100% agree that if you sincerely believe ganja is a sacrament that brings you close to Jah or God or Allah, then you should be free to smoke it. What troubles me is that I'm an atheist, so I have no mystical supernatural tales to protect my use, and I shouldn't need any. Why is it that people who can never in a court of law prove that God wants them to smoke weed get immunity from prosecution, but I go to prison because I only believe in stuff that can be proven? Then there's the question of which religions get that special immunity. No religion under 70 years old needs apply. Rastas may get this break in Italy, but in the U.S., sincere Americans who believe in ganja sacrament get to do time because their religion is younger than marijuana prohibition, so they must have formed their religion as an excuse to get high. It's like the medical marijuana situation. Of course I want cancer and HIV patients to have medical marijuana. You'd have to be black-hearted not to. But I want perfectly healthy people to have that right too. I guess it just seems absurd to me that if you had a Jamaican Rasta, a disabled Californian, and me all passing around the same blunt, you'd have a believer, a patient, and a criminal. Del Norte County lifts medical marijuana plant and possession limits from thetriplicate.com. The Del Norte County Board of Supervisors clouded the issue of what is reasonable and excessive Tuesday when it decided to lift its medical marijuana possession and cultivation guidelines. By removing limits on the number of plants a medical marijuana patient or caregiver can grow, and the amount of processed marijuana they can possess, the supervisors put the burden of determining how much is too much on law enforcement, patients, and their doctors. Under the county's current medical marijuana guidelines, which will be in effect until the new law takes over on August 8th, patients and caregivers are allowed to grow up to 99 plants in a 100-square-foot area and be in possession of up to 1 pound of processed buds. It's one of the most liberal standards in the state, and one that local law enforcement officials have said contributes to marijuana percolating to the street. The Board of Supervisors tried to amend the original ordinance and reduce the amount of marijuana a person can legally grow or possess to 6 plants, or 12 seedlings, and 8 ounces of processed product. This change would have brought Del Norte County in line with a majority of counties in the state that follow the same guidelines. However, the board opted instead for no guidelines after a state appellate court ruled that placing limits on medical marijuana was unconstitutional. If a patient doesn't have a set prescription for medical marijuana, such as 35 plants and 2 pounds, then someone in law enforcement would need to make a determination on whether or not the patient's situation warrants that amount. Well, if they have been growing up to 99 plants and keeping a pound of buds, why doesn't law enforcement just adopt that as their operating policy? Absent a directive from the people, why should they arbitrarily decide who is now a criminal and who is not on August 8th when they were all legal on August 7th?
Stupid Stoner Stories.
As a public service, Normal reminds you that smoking marijuana will not make one stupid. However, some stupid people do smoke marijuana. Don't be one of those stoners that make the rest of us look bad. Learn your lesson from today's
Stupid Stoner Story.
Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Minutes after he was arrested on bail for marijuana possession, Adelbert Harvey was arrested again in Market Square Tuesday afternoon for allegedly mooning people, say police. As a result, Harvey, age 35, with no permanent address, faces 3 Class A misdemeanor charges of possession of drugs, breach of bail conditions, and indecent exposure / lewdness. According to police, they received reports from witnesses nearly 10 minutes after Harvey was released about him exposing his buttocks in the middle of downtown. Prosecutors argue that Harvey should be held on cash bail because of the fact that he violated terms of his release nearly 10 minutes after being arrested for the marijuana charge. Judge Soego Gardner asked Harvey if the court could trust him to stay on good behavior, after which he responded with, quote, "If I don't drink, I guess," end quote. While admitting to having a drinking problem, Harvey said he was still intoxicated when released on the first charge and called his latest arrest a wake-up call.
Don't you just hate it when you get a story about a messed up alcoholic doing something really stupid? But since marijuana is illegal, people will equate breaking the law on marijuana with the stupid things that were caused by the alcohol?
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
Reefer Madness.
Oh, yeah, we got another great dose of reefer madness here. This one comes from Kentucky and the Courier Journal newspaper.
If you're a baby boomer, don't lull yourself into thinking that marijuana is a fading fad that represents a modest threat to today's youth. You'd be wrong. Nearly half of today's teenagers try marijuana before graduating from high school, and by their senior year, more than 20% are regular users, Science Daily reported in May.
But according to those same figures that describe 19.8%, not over 20, of the class of 2005 used marijuana in the last month, for the class of 1975, the baby boomers, that figure was 27.1%. In fact, in 1979, lifetime use peaked at 60.4%, and in 1978, monthly use peaked at 37.1%.
More teens use marijuana than all other illegal drugs combined, and they are at greater risk than teens who smoked pot a couple of decades ago. Jim Couser, a chemical dependency therapist in the Center for Behavioral Health at Baptist Hospital East, said, quote, "It's much more potent than what they smoked at Woodstock," end quote. A more recent style of smoking marijuana also is intensifying its impact. Dr. Elizabeth Garcia Gray, Chief Medical Officer of Child Psychiatric Services for Seven County Services, Inc., said, quote, "During the 60s, there were mostly joints. Now we have blunts, which are like two or three joints packed in one. When they pack it in blunts, the potency is much more, and if they smoke four or five blunts a day, it's like 10 to 12 joints," end quote.
Well, yeah, of course. It's like when you take one shot of 70-proof whiskey and you add it to another shot of 70-proof whiskey, you get a double shot of 140-proof whiskey, right? No, you dolt. Blunts are no more potent than joints. Marijuana is marijuana. And the size of the blunt, well, duh, that's like saying if you drink three 40-ounce beers, that's like drinking 10 12-ounce cans. It doesn't follow that if boomers smoked four or five joints in a day, that today's consumers are smoking four or five blunts in a day. People smoke to get high. If it took a whole joint of Woodstock weed, or if it takes 10 people sharing one of today's blunts, people smoke that much and stop.
Couser said cannabis may lead alcohol as the number one substance abused by teens because it is, quote, "easier to conceal and a lot more accessible," end quote, than alcohol.
Yeah, because nobody hassles you for any ID. And you can get it at high school behind the shop building from another student. And if you're caught with it, they'll take you to drug court and sentence you to rehab so Mr. Couser can keep his bed counts up.
He said the mental health consequences of marijuana use range from transient amnesia to intensifying depressive disorders. Marijuana also may trigger an early onset of schizophrenia in those at risk for the illness.
So you'd think then that you'd see rates of schizophrenia, depression, and transient amnesia, whatever that means. I think it means forgetting where you've just left your keys. You'd think you'd see those rates rise and fall relative to the rates of marijuana use and potency. You go right ahead and find that data. Look hard. I'll give you a head start. Over the past 40 years, nationwide rates for schizophrenia stayed relatively constant at about 1.1% of the population. Even during the 60s summer of love, GIs returning from Vietnam in the 70s with killer jungle weed, and the 80s advent of connoisseur indoor marijuana production, and the 90s birth of medical marijuana, and all the way to today, 1.1% of the people get schizophrenia. Now, that said, it's not for adolescents. There is credible research to suggest that cannabis may increase the risk of developing schizophrenia if used heavily by teens who are predisposed to schizophrenia. But we need to avoid overreacting to the relative odds when the actual odds are still quite low. What's the difference? Well, think of it this way. Relative odds say that if you buy 10 lottery tickets, you're 10 times as likely to win the jackpot as the person who bought one ticket. Actual odds say that both of you have a greater chance of being hit by lightning.
Other dangers: lung damage and social and behavioral problems. Marijuana used when driving can make it difficult to judge distances and react to signals and sounds on the road. Marijuana affects judgment, perception, and memory, so it can mean poor performance in school, in sports, or at a job. It can lead to risky sexual behavior.
Your lung damage consists of, at worst, a hacking cough or mild bronchitis, and that's if you're bong hitting morning, noon, and night for decades. Marijuana smoking does not lead to head, neck, or lung cancers. Now, don't smoke pot at school, in sports, or at work. And practice safe sex. None of those harms are caused by marijuana. They're caused by irresponsibility and would be twice as devastating if we were talking about irresponsible drinking.
Kauser reports that withdrawal from marijuana can take longer than withdrawing from alcohol or cocaine. He said the THC in marijuana accumulates in the fat tissues, which are slow to release the chemical.
Bald-faced liar. The THC-COOH metabolites accumulate in the fat tissues. These are non-psychoactive compounds that cause no withdrawal symptoms whatsoever. The THC itself is clear of your system within 2 to 4 hours.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 12 states today, and THCF has medical clinics in 6 of those states. Our physicians help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help them obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, Colorado, Nevada, Hawaii, and California. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at www.hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
All right, we get a chance to go all the way out to the middle of the Pacific Ocean and say aloha to Pam Lichty, who is the president of the Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii and also a board member with the Drug Policy Alliance. Pam, aloha. Welcome to the Daily Audio Stash.
I'm sorry, what?
I said, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Well, good to have you on the show. Unfortunately, we're having to call you under some bad circumstances, and that is the recent veto by Hawaii Governor Linda Lingle over a medical marijuana measure, not even really medical marijuana so much as just studying medical marijuana. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about the measure she vetoed and where everything stands at this point?
Okay. Let me give you a little background first. Hawaii was actually the first state to legislatively enact a medical marijuana law. Up until then, all the other states had done it by initiative process. What we don't have that, like a lot of states don't. And in 2000, actually in 99, our then-governor, Ben Cayetano, a Democrat, proposed a medical marijuana bill, and it took 2 years. But in 2000, the state legislature approved it. So it's been up and running since 2000. And there's a lot of problems with it, as we can maybe get into later. But and so ever since then, essentially, we've been trying to improve it as one of the main advocacy groups for patients in the state. And about 2 weeks ago, I guess, the governor put it on her list of potential vetoes. Now, this bill that she vetoed, it was really a compromise of a compromise. It only called for a task force to study some issues that patients had been telling us that they were most concerned with, a lot of them having to do with access to their medicine.
Sure. So this was just a measure to study the feasibility of trying to get medicine to patients.
Yeah, it had several specifications about what it was supposed to study. It was supposed to look at whether or not the law affords an adequate supply, and I can get into that a little later. Most people think it is not adequate. Whether it's feasible to establish marijuana growing facilities on each island, and whether inter-island marijuana transport can be made possible for traveling patients. And then the task force was also supposed to look at other issues and obstacles that patients encounter and look at what other states are doing. And on the inter-island thing, for those of listeners who aren't familiar with the Hawaii situation, we're an island state with five main islands, and virtually the only transportation between the islands is by plane. There are some ferries that have just started, but they're not nearly as used as the planes. So, as you probably know, Russ, the planes are the federal government's purview, and so you run into problems when you're carrying your medicine, even within the state, if you're on a plane.
Wow, yeah, because getting anywhere from one place to another in Hawaii is, you know, covered by the feds. And, of course, they don't recognize medical marijuana. That's got to be a big problem for patients out there.
It is. It is. I mean, for example, somebody's going to we have a very kind of lopsided, very centralized state where Honolulu has most of the medical facilities, most of the physicians, most of the population. So there are a lot of scenarios where a patient with cancer, for example, who lives on one of the neighbor islands, as we call them, has to fly to Honolulu for medical treatment for chemo or whatever, and they want to bring their medicine with them to relieve their symptoms, and yet there's a problem there. And since we don't have any above-ground dispensaries, they're out of luck when they come to a place that they don't know.
So originally, if I follow the story correctly, advocates and the legislature were, you know, looking at ways to provide this to patients, and that raised so many red flags they decided to do this compromise measure of just studying it, just talking about it,
yeah.
and that got vetoed. What kind of popular support did this measure have, this compromise measure, in the Senate and the House there in Hawaii?
Well, it actually passed easily. It passed, there were only five no votes in the House out of 51 members, and those were all Republicans. Hawaii is a heavily Democratic state. And in the Senate, it passed unanimously. All 25 senators voted for it. And when the governor then went ahead and vetoed it, the Senate voted to override it, but unfortunately the House did not. The House was much more timid about overriding a lot of things than the Senate was for some reason. So unless both sides do it, it doesn't happen.
So the House had this, all but five members had enough support, you know, that had they chosen to override the veto, they probably could have, but
yeah.
They chose not to.
They chose not to, and I've got calls into some representatives to try to find out what happened, but haven't gotten an answer yet. I think the short answer is probably they didn't think it was worth expending political capital on. And, you know, I see that as partly a failure on our part that we haven't impressed upon them just how important this is to patients.
Yeah, it's time that we hold their feet to the fire and make them realize that these political decisions of theirs are going to have consequences. So let's tell the listeners out there, especially those out in Hawaii, how they can get a hold of their legislators or what websites that you guys are maintaining to inform them.
Probably the best bet is just to go directly to the state legislative website, which is actually quite good. And you can find all sorts of information on there about this bill and everything else. And that website is www.capitol.hawaii, with two I's on the end, .gov. Yeah, so we had introduced a bill this year that had kind of our wish list of things that we would like to have seen changed. And among them was, in past years, let me just put it this way. Since this law was enacted in 2000, we've been trying to get it improved ever since. And I think this is a lesson to other states. Once you have the disadvantage of doing things via the legislative process is there's so many compromises involved. And then we've discovered to our regret that when you try to then amend it and improve it, it's really an uphill battle. It's HB 2675.
Okay.
And if you put that in the search thing, when you look at bill status, it'll tell you just exactly what went down, and you can also click on text. It'll give you the whole text of it. As I say, it was pretty innocuous. But, so our wish list would have done a lot of things. For years, we've been trying to move it out of the Department of Public Safety Narcotics Enforcement Division to the Department of Health, where it is in most states that have a registration system. But we even dropped that request because as long as we have a Republican governor, which we do, that just is not happening. We wanted to do things like increase the caregiver ratio, which right now is 1-to-1 patient to caregiver. Try to put in a reciprocity clause so other medical marijuana states, you know, would recognize Hawaii's and theirs would be recognized here. And again, that's important in a state where there's a lot of tourism. We get so many calls from patients from California who are coming over. And it's just in general, we wanted to make the program more user-friendly.
Okay. Now, is there a website for the Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii that people should know about?
Yeah, it is. There is. And it's dpfhi.org. And it's under construction at the moment, or rehabilitation at the moment. But there is a link for the a medical marijuana brochure that we published that has the entire text of the law. It has frequently asked questions and a lot of information about the law.
Well, that's perfect. Well, Pam Lichty is the president of the Drug Policy Forum of Hawaii, working hard to improve the medical marijuana program for all the islanders. And Pam, thanks for joining us and aloha.
Thank you, Russ. Thanks for having me. Bye.
We're going to go across the country to the East Coast now to Rhode Island. And we're speaking now with Jesse Stout from the Rhode Island Patients Advocacy Coalition, which you can learn more about on the web at ripatients.org. And Jesse, welcome back to the stash.
Hi, thanks a lot, Russ.
Hey, I guess we got, you know, some bad news that we have to cover here about the vetoes that happened in Rhode Island regarding medical marijuana.
Yeah, that's right. When our Compassion Center distribution bill didn't get a vote, we passed a study commission bill, and the governor has vetoed the study commission.
Yeah, so can't even talk about medical marijuana, much less even, I mean, that surprised me. We had a similar veto in legislation in Hawaii where they were going to put together a task force to study what they might do, perhaps if someday they thought about they would wanted to have medical marijuana being grown for patients. I mean, isn't it just absurd that they can't even talk about this stuff at the legislative level?
Right, our veto happened in the opposite order of Hawaii's. Where they're considering the idea, our Senate had already passed the Compassion Center distribution bill 29-6, and then only when it did not pass the House did we come across a study commission resolution that the House and Senate did both pass that would have allowed a task force to discuss this issue for the fall, come out with a report in January, but the governor's vetoed it.
Yeah, and so what's the next step? Is there a possibility that this is going to get overridden? Would it have enough popular support for that?
Yeah, we're definitely looking forward to that kind of a vote with 69% public support for compassion centers and that great 29-6 vote in the Senate. We definitely think there's support for the issue itself, which would definitely be great for a compassion center study commission. We're hoping that the House and Senate will come back this fall in time to override the governor's veto.
And until then, patients are just kind of left on their own to find it on the black market or from helpful friends, I suppose.
That's right, but we have high hopes for this study commission. If they do override the veto, we'll be looking at a 13-member panel composed of legislators, patients, caregivers, a doctor, a nurse. It'll be a great way to explore the issue before reconsidering the Compassion Center this spring.
Well, in addition to compassion, the Compassion Center idea, let's talk a little bit about what that would entail. How would that be similar or different from other compassion centers across the country?
Well, I understand in California there are dispensaries that distribute medical marijuana to patients likely under county guidelines. This would be, to my knowledge, the first state law that would have the state of Rhode Island's Department of Health regulating compassion centers and giving licenses to a couple of compassion centers to compassion centers that could have patients sign them up as caregivers and then grow and distribute marijuana for those patients.
So this isn't like a retail operation. You're actually designating the compassion center to be your caregiver.
That's right. The only patients who could go to the compassion center would be those who already appointed them one of their two primary caregivers.
Okay. So let's say that runs into roadblocks. Are there any other proposals, intermediate steps that people are considering to alleviate the problem of supply for patients?
Well, when the Compassion Center law didn't go forward this spring, our immediate step to form an intermediate bridge to the Compassion Center was going to be this study commission. the study commission resolution, which passed the Senate unanimously and the House 54-2. So it looked really great until the governor vetoed it. Now, as I said, we're still hoping for an override in that veto to allow us to discuss the issue in this intermediate step so that we have a legislative report to go on when we try again next year.
Okay. So how many patients are we talking about in the state of Rhode Island at this point?
The state of Rhode Island now has just about 400 registered patients and just about one caregiver per patient.
Okay, great. All right. Well, we'll look forward to getting the support that that needs for either a veto override or to continue on the next session with, the next step to help out the most sick and vulnerable people in Rhode Island get their medicine like they deserve. And, again, for more information on that, you've got information on your website, correct?
That's right, ripatients.org.
All right, ripatients.org. This is the Rhode Island Patient Advocacy Coalition, and we've been speaking with Jesse Stout. Jesse, thanks for helping and filling us all in on this.
Thanks very much, Russ.
If I were to tell you that in America, right now, over 1 million children sell marijuana, what would you think? Would you think that any public policy that creates over 1 million teenage marijuana dealers needs to be reexamined and possibly amended? You would not be alone. The members of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, aka NORML, have been working since 1970 to reform marijuana laws such that responsible adults, not children, sell and use marijuana. Isn't it high time to reform America's misguided marijuana laws? This is Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of NORML in Washington, D.C. Only concerned citizens can effectively end the federal government's nearly 70-year-old prohibition on responsible adult marijuana sales and use. Want to know more about how you can help? Contact us at NORML, toll-free, 888-67-NORMAL, or by visiting the organization's popular and informative webpage at NORML, NORML.org.
Here at the NORML Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. A little ROCK in the USA today, but we go all the way to Scotland to get it. Infallible gives us a taste of Edinburgh garage rock with today's musical hit, Get You High. These boys out of Scotland will rock your kilt off. Playing live shows in rowdy bars, Martin Delaney, the lead guitarist, Andy Northall, the bass player and self-proclaimed hippie of the band, and Lester Smulski, the lead vocalist and rhythm guitarist, and Chick Harrington on the drums, and Chick Harrington on the drum kit are oozing classic rock and roll sound. Are these guys real rockers? Well, Martin Delaney lists guitar eating as a hobby, and Andy Northall custom-built his two-neck bass guitars, a fretted neck and a fretless one. I'm sure at least one of their amps goes all the way to 11. It's one louder. Let Infallible get you high with their sound, then visit their website, www.infalliblerocks.com, to learn more about these rock and rollers. You can get more information on them at our website, stash.normal.org, where you can also get a download of the MP3 for this song, It's Infallible with Get You High.
The best thing I've ever seen. Don't you know, baby, you're the only girl of my dreams. Starting about 9:05, ain't it good to be alive?
there's only one side to life. If you believe in yourself, then everything will be fine. Starting about 9:05, ain't it good to be alive? There's no place left to go. It's time to start the show. Get your high, get your high.
I know that lots of people like it, so let's see what happens if you overdo it.
Do we have any pot smokers here today? Any at
all? My name is Doug Benson, and I'm about to get super high.
The term medical marijuana, you drank the Kool-Aid, because there is no such thing as medical marijuana.
I'm going to smoke pot every day for 30 days
and try to remember to film it.
And my movie's going to be called Super High Me.
Or business as usual. I haven't decided yet on the title.
I'm going to be hospitalized, I think.
Some people call it dope. Some think it smells like burning rope. I tell you, it relieves my mind.
All right, well, it's Thursday, and it's time for some cannabis comedy featuring our cannabis comedy correspondent, Terry Joyce. Terry, welcome back to the Daily Audio Stash.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be back.
How's everything down in California?
Well, everything's doing pretty good here. You know, it's nice and sunny, although our economy is really slow, and a lot of people are suffering. And my recommendation is that you just take a big joint, take a hit on it, and go, you know what, everything's going to be okay.
There we go.
The universe will support me.
The economy may be crashing, but we can all feel a little bit better, huh?
That's right. If it's tough, you know, you just relax, take a joint, and know it's all going to be okay.
That's right. And you've got a special guest joining us here also, Jeffrey Peterson, who you two guys worked together in the Dope Show up in Portland. That's how I met you. And Jeffrey, welcome to the Stash.
Hey, Radical Russ. How you doing, brother? Nice to hear from you again.
Yeah, doing really good. Hey, that was so much fun, you know, when you guys came up here and did the Dope Show. And I remember, I think one of the funniest things you had was your take on all the anti-pot TV commercials that are out there.
Oh, yeah. What an insult they are to us, you know, and the pot community. I mean, for example, there's this one going around right now with this girl is in her kitchen with her dog, and her dog says to her, "Please don't smoke weed."
Yeah.
"You're just not the same when you smoke weed." "Oh, I'm not the same. You're a talking dog."
Yeah.
"And look, if my dog's talking to me and I'm not high, we have a serious problem."
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And there's one where this kid is walking downstairs to the basement where his big brother lives. And he says, my big brother never stole from anyone. My big brother never hurt anyone. My big brother never got arrested. My big brother never did anything at all.
Yeah.
That sounds like a pretty decent guy to me. I'm messing with him.
Yeah, why?
If anybody deserves to get high, it's that guy.
he's behaving. Absolutely. So now you guys work together with the Dope Show, and then I guess there's some history here about what happened with the Dope Show and how Hollywood Live came together and what you guys are doing now with your project. So why don't you guys just kind of give us a breakdown of what happened with you two?
Well, you know, mainly one of the things that happened was that we were to do a show, and it was our first out-of-town gig, and we picked Portland because, from my experience, I knew that Portland was a big marijuana supporter. And I had ties with the Mustard Man in Portland, and I thought, you know what, let's do a show for Oregon Normal in Portland on 420 at the Bagdad Theater with a couple of other shows surrounding that. And what happened was that the Bagdad Theater had originally booked a couple of hosts from a very popular show, the Marconi Show, on the show already on 420. So what we did is we said, well, you know what? We'll bring the Dope Show in and then ask if the hosts want to be on the show. And they said yes, and they went for it. And so about 2.5 weeks before the show we were to come down there, QFO radio and CBS radio wouldn't allow their hosts to be on our show because they said they found the subject matter to be offensive and not in line with the image of the radio station.
And what kind of radio station?
Huh?
What kind of radio station are we talking about?
We're talking about a classic rock station that actually sells detoxification products on air.
Yeah, okay.
For money.
Right.
Okay.
Wouldn't fit their standards.
So they're saying their host can't go because it's not in the image of the station. Well, I guess if the image is not appropriate, the person who pays for it makes it okay, right?
Right.
Okay. So I contacted some, All Might. I emailed people that were in the newspapers, your newspapers, and saying, you know, that this had happened, and how is it offensive? Because it's for Oregon Normal, and you were the first state to decriminalize marijuana in 1973. And they read, the Willamette Week ran an article. And, the article, you know, basically just pointed a finger at QFO and CBS Radio, didn't insult the host. But when the article came out, the host decided to make fun of one of the Portland producer, and they basically character assassinated him on the air.
Mm.
So, you know, and it was kind of devastating and it just kind of escalated, you know, like I was like, you know, sending emails out online and things were happening, and then, you know, it was picked up by the Marijuana Policy Project. We have our picture on there, and, you know, National Lampoon Radio asked us to be on the, you know, radio and everything. And then when the raid incident happened that I talked about like last week, happened during that time as well. And what happened was that we were getting just, you know, a lot of press. And, you know, they wanted to do an article. The Pasadena Weekly wanted to do an article. And they wanted to put me on the cover. And I said, no, my partner and I, Jeffrey Peterson, I go, we're both on the Dope Show. Can you come and photograph both of us? Okay. And they said, yes. And then they did everything they did, but they still put me on the cover.
Ah.
And it was just kind of like the strain of everything, the strain of what happened. We had people screaming. We had acts backing out of the show because of what happened, and then bigger acts coming in. I mean, we just got, all of a sudden, we were just under this incredible amount of pressure as partners. And, you know, the story ended up threatening what we were trying to do together. And because of that, we basically split our ways because of the tension and the stress that we went through as creative people.
Sure, sure. So what's been happening since then? Are you still working together? Have you done separate projects? Are you planning on getting back together in the future?
We actually have. And, you know, it was just, you know, a lot of emotions built up. And as with Hollywood and the entertainment industry, what they often try to do is split up, you know, partnerships and bands and stuff like that. You know, like a band like No Doubt, they'll try to accentuate Gwen Stefani and leave the band kind of in the shadows. And it was a similar situation. They were trying to separate us. And you know what? The best thing that's come out of this for us is that Carrie and I have been able to hone down our own unique perspectives and be stronger in our own separate ways. And then we've also come together and worked on stuff. Carrie, the first time we worked together again was at the Medical Marijuana Expo last year. And, you know, I have no hard feelings, and Carrie doesn't either. And we, you know, we're for a cause, but we're also, you know, comedy is a great bond. And we both respect each other a lot as artists. So
that's great.
We continue to work together in different ways and, you know, keep representing 420 comedy.
I mean, we figure that, you know, we're all in it for the same cause. And, you know, and it's not just us, but there's other people that work together, and they get in these little fights and arguments, and all these little chants start being formed.
Yeah.
And the thing of it is that we need to unify each other. We have to put that stuff behind, because there's something greater at hand.
Chances are, if we do come together and we smoke a big fat bowl together, we'll probably forget about what we're mad about anyway.
Good point.
Might as well smoke a bowl and chill out.
That's right. And Jeffrey, you know,
can't we be friends?
Jeffrey, you know, if you want to get, you know, the more attention next time, alongside with Terry, I think you too need to have a bare boob shot with the Statue of Liberty.
That's more than appropriate.
A little equal time for the boys, right?
I've been mixing those elements that right now sex and weed are just like synonymous.
Well, it makes sex better, actually. Come on.
It does, yeah. And I mean, you know, Tara Patrick being on the cover of High Times magazine is proof positive. In fact, I just did a show for Howard Dover out in Vegas, Extravaganja, and it was at the Green Door, which is a swingers club.
Right.
So it just goes to show you 420 comedy is, you know, on the frontier, and we're like blazing new trails. It's pretty cool.
I think marijuana, people who smoke marijuana also are maybe free in other areas of life too. I mean, I think that it's kind of maybe it coincides with liberation, even if it's porn or even whatever it is.
Mm.
So many people smoke weed. 97 million Americans have smoked weed one time in their lifetime at one point. You know, it's like we are unified. If you're smoking weed, you're probably a little more open to some other stuff in life as well.
That's so true. And, you know, another example of that is I'll be attending my ninth Burning Man this year. I go to the Burning Man Festival, which is, you know, the freest place on the planet. And I sample some of the best cannabis from all over the globe there. And I'll be camping with these guys called the Tuna Guys from Coos Bay, Oregon. And boy, they bring some killer Oregon bud. So I'm really excited about that.
Excellent.
You know, I was just at the Whiskey A Go Go last Saturday, listening to Bluzetta. You know, the Bluzetta, you know, band.
Yeah.
And it was my birthday on the 4th, and I was, you know, she gave me like extra tickets, and so I dressed up as my cartoon character, which is a White Widow Shotgun. And Henry Hemp, and we went to the Whiskey, and you know, Bluzetta played, and when she sings the song The Weed Revolution, you know, Henry Hemp just jumped on stage, and I was like, oh, my God, you know. And then people went crazy, and she did, and then I went up, and it was just like this amazing little synergy that happened. I mean, people are very, very positive about cannabis, and there were people there from other countries. And everyone who saw us wanted a picture. They wanted to talk about it. They were like, yeah, you know, it's something that, you know, it's even out of the country, which is exciting.
Well, you know, Carrie, you bring up a good point. As you know, like, I have a character, a superhero character named Sheep Man that I've been doing since 2000, and he's a pot-smoking superhero, and he's like, and you know what? It gets a dialogue going, especially with the costumes, and I have a comic book for the character, and I think that's, you know, Henry Hemp is also a friend of mine, and I think this is great that people are finding new ways to express themselves within the cannabis culture. It just keeps going on and on. I mean, Carrie and I know pot magicians. We know, like, pot artists. I know a lot of musicians that are dedicated to cannabis and in their music. you know, bands like Burning the Masses and Cano Bliss.
I mean, like, you know, from like the Beatles on, you start to hear pot references in music.
Now, Terry and Jeffrey, let's let everyone know what you guys are up to. So if they want to catch some real 420 comedy live and help support the movement, how they can help. I know, Terry, you were talking about your work with the Patient Advocacy Network.
Yes, I have been doing quite a bit of work with the Patient Advocacy Network, doing fundraisers, my show Hollyweed Live, and things like that. What we're going to start to do is we're going to start doing street performing.
Oh yeah.
Throughout you know, Southern California, and we have this really cute idea for the street performing, and basically the reason why we're doing it is because we want to create awareness that, you know, that we have cannabinoid receptors in our brain, and just like information on what marijuana does and how it can help you. And how natural it is to smoke it.
Yeah.
And as well as, you know, knowledge on hemp and what hemp can do to help save the planet. So basically, it's a nonprofit organization and we're 501c3. So we're totally, you can look us up at www.cannabissaveslives.com. We are also looking for some donations and some sponsorship to help us fund this particular event. So if you would like to do that and make a donation, you can do it right there on the website, and it will be tax deductible for you as well.
Oh, far out. Now, Jeffrey, how about you? Are you getting involved with that, or do you have other gigs that you need to promote?
Yeah, I've got a bunch of stuff I'm going on right now. There's a magazine that I started with my brother, Dan. It's called California Chronicle XXX.
Okay.
It's going to really bridge sex, buds, and rock and roll. we're going to be very blatant about being a party magazine for the cannabis culture lifestyle, and we're going to have interviews with adult film stars, rock stars from System of a Down and Wu-Tang Clan. We're going to have all kinds of great interviews with people from the cannabis culture, Eddie Lepp, Jorge Cervantes, Jack Hare, all have agreed to jump on board. So looking to launch that magazine in actually just a couple weeks. And also I've got a new show that I'm going to be a co-host for Rood TV. It's called Inside Medical Marijuana, and that's going to be with my partner Redbeard. And Redbeard is a knowledgeable cultivator and adult film director and photographer. So we're going to be doing some cool stuff for Rood TV, and you can find me at the Laugh Factory for Chocolate Sundays on August 13th.
Well, that sounds great. And you guys,
can I mention one more thing?
Oh yeah, go ahead. Go ahead, Terry.
Okay, I've been working on a comedy website called ComedyNation.com, and it's a politically and social, driven show. And if you want to check me out, last week I was on it, and it's at www.comedynation.com. It kind of has a little bit of a Bill Maher format to it.
Oh, cool, cool.
So, and also I have some stuff that's archived on there, an interview with Howard Dover on a show that I do there called Access Hollyweed.
Okay.
In the archives. So, feel free to check those out.
Oh, right on. You guys, make sure you guys send me an email with all those links so I can get them up at our blog at stash.normal.org. Terry Joyce was on season one of Last Comic Standing, and her and Jeffrey Peterson were a part of the Dope Show, and they're just two of many of the very talented artists, comedians, musicians, entertainers out there who are fighting for the end of adult marijuana prohibition. Thanks for coming back here and gracing us with your presence, Terry.
Thank you.
All right, see you, Jeffrey.
Peace, brother.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org.
For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, yet some more reefer madness. This one from Dr. A.E. Fossier from the New Orleans Medical and Surgical Journal, published in 1931, which said, quote,
"Under the influence of hashish, those fanatics would madly rush at their enemies and ruthlessly massacre everyone within their grasp,"
end quote. What the good doctor failed to tell you is that the enemies that they ruthlessly massacred was a bag of chips and some ice cream. Ah, yes, the marijuana assassin of youth message. Yeah, when was the last time you ever met a violent pothead? I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here on The Stash, and we'll be back tomorrow with some more news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.